Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. I'm here today with my guest, Ben Foster of Nebsley Media, and today we're discussing finding customers based on your values and vision, and how this can make running an agency a whole lot more enjoyable. Ben is a British-born creative who has a professional background working in multiple continents with hands-on experience in every phase of the funnel. From holding a position as creative director of Asia's biggest importer of rare whiskey and non-Cuban cigars, to running digital campaigns for training coaches and doing design for international brands such as Marriott and Red Bull. His career has touched a number of different sectors. Thanks so much for joining us today, Ben.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's great to be on the podcast and about a topic that I think we all can relate to a bit.
Yes, I'm really excited to delve into the topic. But first, let's dive into a couple questions so that we can get to know you a little bit.
Excellent.
So tell us, where are you tuning in from today?
So I am calling from a flexible working space in Regent's Park, London. I don't know if anyone's heard of it, but yeah.
Okay.
It's a well-known area in London, in the UK, home of the London Zoo, actually. But
Very cool.
This is where I call home, is the UK.
Love it. I love London. It's such a cool town. Cool city.
Yeah, definitely is.
Yeah. And then so tell us, what really motivates or inspires you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
I think it's a whole world of things, really. In terms of my professional side, I think I really do have a passion for marketing and for creativativity, especially. Sometimes the more logistical side of it and the less fun housekeeping parts that you have to do can be difficult, but it's all kind of pushed along by that creativity in me. I mean, I started my career in a creative role and kind of fell into marketing along the way as it happens. And I think that at being able to be in an industry where I can add creativity to what I do in the day to day, whether that's working with clients or running campaigns myself and managing my team, you can kind of add that in wherever you want. We're kind of a blank canvas in the marketing world, so to say. So we're in a great field.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, marketing is such a great mix of the creative and the analytical side. So yeah, it's I love that. And then, so tell us, how did you get into digital marketing?
I mentioned that I kind of fell into it, and it's true almost. I mean, I started my career as a photographer. My first real job was editing pictures for a magazine, actually, okay. Funnily enough, which was incredibly boring because it was a kind of directory for furniture-based businesses, which wasn't really my thing as a teenager, you know. But that kind of pushed me in. I worked as my first job in a photography studio here in London.
Okay.
And, was a photographer's assistant. Working on all sorts of shoots from Vogue to Pizza Hut commercials.
Oh, very cool.
So even to things like having to throw dirt on people dressed up as moles. So there was all sorts of things going on there. But it was a great deep dive into the world of photography and lighting. And from there, I had a number of resident photographer positions, mainly in the hospitality sector. So I was lucky enough to travel the world with that. I worked in the Maldives for the Four Seasons. I worked in Thailand, where I actually grew up, for Nikki Beach, which is a beach club brand. So I was quite lucky in that. And it was you know, as a young adult, you get to the point where you say, oh, this isn't fulfilling for me. This isn't doing it. I'm doing event photography. I'm taking the same pictures week in, week out. You know, yeah. I'm not being creative anymore, you know, and having one of those typical, I would like to say teenage, but I was past my teenage years. But yeah, one of those typical teenager moments. Right. Where I said, I'm going to quit photography. I took this big stand and made this big decision and moved to Bangkok with my now wife, who said, you know, you can do it. You can do marketing. You've got design. You know how to do it. And she pushed me into that a little bit, actually, funnily enough. And then I happened to find my way into this company who sold whiskey and cigars, and had an excellent mentor, Eddie Guerra, his name is, and he's now back in Miami, heading up Davidoff Cigars marketing. So he's an incredible marketeer, but he first mentored me in how to market for events, because that was my job. And quickly I kind of progressed through that. He taught me a lot of great things, including what I now call the rule of three. So, you know, never run an event that appeals to one interest. Always look for three things. So, you know, we would do these cigar events, but there would also be a watch brand there, but there would also be, you know, a live band there. So there's three reasons for people to come. So you could kind of use three different hooks in your campaigns. And I actually still use that in almost every kind of campaign that we're doing. Like, what's the rule of three? What three interests are we hitting here? Because one is kind of never enough. It was a bit of a funny journey into marketing, and then started doing a lot of freelance, and that's kind of where the agency came in. Before the call, we were talking about it, but I started the agency. We started it in Thailand, and then when I moved back to the UK, I continued that here, and I had clients all over the world from here. Mm-hmm. And now our digital marketing agency, we have a full-time team in Thailand as well, and a sub branch there. So looking after Southeast Asia. So we're in a very exciting time in terms of growth for the agency, and having, you know, a full-time team in two different continents, which is really fun. And then obviously the incredible world of freelancers that we have all over the place.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. So tell us a little bit more about Nebsley Media, and then how do you guys really differentiate yourselves from other agencies?
So we would say we're a full service agency. We do a lot of social media based work. That's kind of our main forte. Previously, I would say pre-pandemic, we were very much focused on the hospitality sector, because that's where our backgrounds lie. You know, I've held positions as marketing in a lot of big hospitality brands, as is my partner Suli, who she's also worked for incredible luxury hospitality brands in a PR sense. So we were doing a lot of PR support and marketing support for hospitality brands. And then post-pandemic, that's kind of shifted a bit, but we're still, you know, still, I know, driving back into that. But we have clients in such a range of different sectors, but the ones we've really sticked with, and I guess that's how this topic came about, are the ones that we really believe in, and the ones that we love their product or their service, and it just feels natural, you know. Some of the other ones we kind of either parted way with, or we said, look, we don't really want to work together anymore, because our capacity, we're really trying to make sure that we're working on things that we know not only we can get results for, but that we feel proud, or it would be something that we would wear, or we would recommend to our friends and family. So that kind of built, I guess, our core values as a company, that we're going to only work with people who we like and who we really believe in. We do a lot of social media advertising for companies, a lot of content planning. We're working on websites as well. Less now than in the early days in terms of website design, because I'm sure you know it's a fairly subjective thing at times, and it is a hell of a lot of work to get right. And you know, it's not exactly the most scalable thing in our eyes. So we prefer to do things that we can be creative, very much be creative, but also that we can scale up for ourselves and for our customers as well.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Yeah, it's it sounds like you guys are offering some really incredible services. And so, yeah, we sort of touched on what we're going to be talking about today. So we're going to be talking about finding customers based on your values and vision. So could you talk to us to start about what your company values and vision of the company are?
So for us, we like to say, and this is kind of our core value statement, is that we don't want to be the biggest or the best, but we want to be as best as we can be in the things that we're passionate about. You know, we don't have to be the biggest agency out there, and we don't have to offer every single service under the sun, but we do want to really stick with the things that we enjoy doing. And we do want to offer that, you know, from passion. And we want to offer that as if we're working together as one. Whenever we onboard a new company, it's very much, you know, you're not hiring an outside agency. Don't think of us as your third party agency. We're now becoming part of your team. We're an extension of your team. And a lot of that lead in is about understanding the values of the companies we're working with and really integrating our team. You know, we send our team to meet, we let them join in the meetings with our clients. Obviously that can't happen with every single client in that we onboard, but you know, we do, that is our vision, is that we really become an integrated part of everyone that we work with. So I guess that's the core, cool. The core values that we kind of, that we live by. And now we're very much going after companies that, instead of doing a wide, you know, net, we're really looking at companies and then we're approaching them and saying, hey, we're talking to you because we like you. We're talking to you because we believe in what you're doing.
Yeah.
We might not be able to work with you and we don't mind, but if you're open to it, we'd love to work together. That's the kind of sales approach that we're taking now. And yes, it doesn't create the volume that the more automated, wider outreach systems that we used to use is creating, but every client that is now signing on is very much, you know, one of us and we're one of them. So it's great.
Yeah. So you've really niched down the kinds of customers that you're serving now.
Yeah, exactly. And it kind of sits in two main buckets. It's either we love their product or service, or we really believe that they have a big future down the line. So,
okay.
You know, whether that's based on the thing that they're offering, it fits our values, and that's looking after their customers and looking after their community, or, you know, that we look at it and we say, hey, that would be so much fun, or we think that they could be doing so much better about telling their story. So we're working with companies who are helping from sustainability, which is something that is a hot topic, but
yeah,
we know it can be quite a lot of people are using it almost as a buzzword, but we do find some companies and we think, hey, that's actually really cool and that actually has application and I'd love to be part of that. And we have a couple of key clients who are doing things like that we're working with, and it's been probably some of our best clients just because it's something that we believe in so much. And then we have the other side, which is the smaller businesses who are like, that feels like the feeling that we've had, you know, the way that they're trying to do things, that felt like when we were like, oh, let's start this product or let's start this idea and launch this product together.
Yeah,
I can see that they're in that moment that we had. Let's go together and let's like become part of that movement, because it's like so much fun when you're in those early stages, but it's also a difficult one for businesses. I mean, we're lucky that we know the marketing side of things and the sales side, because that's a huge part of growth and a business success. But for many, they're kind of, they have all everything else to be great, but they just get stuck there and you're almost like, okay, now it's time to hold each other's hand and we'll go at it together. So yeah, I guess those are the two kind of key verticals that we're now going after, is these small businesses that we really think, wow, they're cool. They've got a great idea. We love them. Mm-hmm. You know, that we could be them if we look at ourselves 10 years ago. And then the other one is, wow, their product or service really is hitting the nail on the head when it comes to their values or what they're trying to do, or, you know, it really has an impact on not only their customers, but the people in the community around them.
Yeah. So you guys just make sure that you're really passionate about the businesses that you bring on to work with you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I'd be lying to say that every single business we're like, yes, we love it. You know, you still got to pay the bills. So not 100% is like that. Some of them we're like, okay, we kind of get it. You're not doing anything wrong, but it's the ones that we really connect with are the ones that we have the best success with in reality.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. And then, so do you find it's harder to scale your business when you're being selective with the clients that you're bringing on?
That's a great question. And it's doing it this way is a double-edged sword. It's a yes and a no answer. And it's probably not the answer that you want to hear or anyone listening, because it's easier to say things in black and white. Mm-hmm. It's harder to scale in that you have, you know, lower numbers in terms of your outreach and inbound and things like that. You don't have that huge consistent volume coming into the funnel that you could get if you set up, you know, automated outreach, that you set up all of these ad workflows, which is great and it's what we love doing. But in reality, a lot of that churn and burn starts to happen, where you onboard, you sign on clients, they come on, and then, you know, a few months down the line they drop off. Right. And that's the kind of cycle. It doesn't matter if you perform well or you underperform, and there can be a whole host of reasons. Maybe the customer who you sign on in that moment, they really want a marketing agency, and then 3 months down the line they're like, hey, I could do this myself, or they feel underwhelmed because they have unrealistic expectations. Mm-hmm. Or it could be you take a quick look at them and you say, okay, there's my next paycheck. But when you really think about it, is their product something that you believe in, that you would buy, that you really want to sell? Because if it's not, you're probably not going to, you know, sell it or market it or create campaigns with it with true passion. You know, you're going to be doing it as a job. So it does make it harder to have longevity in what you do in that sense. So yes, that does make it harder to scale, but it makes it easier to scale in that you really know who you're going after, and it makes it fun outreach. We sit in our team meetings and we have a group chat on Instagram. We have a group chat on LinkedIn. We have a group chat online. And then we constantly just saying, look at this, look at this, look at this. Like, not saying the name, but a new hotel is opening up in a part of Thailand that we love. And it's a great, cool, forward-thinking brand. And that, for example, in our team meeting this week, we were like, we need to find who's the people here, who's the GM, who's the owner.
We want to work with these guys.
Let's work with them. It's awesome. Like, we could do really great things. We know exactly what to do for them. So we start like in that way. And the numbers are so much smaller, but everyone goes after it like, oh yeah, I'd love to do this. That's cool. And you come into the sales process with marketing ideas already. So and then as soon as you start working with the client, you already have excitement. You have ideas ready to put on the table. And not saying that if it's a client we're not passionate about, we couldn't put ideas on the table. We could, but it would be a reactive thing rather than proactive. We're coming at you already with these ideas and with the momentum behind it already. So, and you know, when you're going in that way, as soon as you start, it starts to feel more natural. You get more excited about the product, about the project, about the service, about everything that's happening. And then in reality, you're probably going to have more success in your campaign. So you're going to have more longevity. So you don't have to sign on as many clients because you've got enough to keep going and going and going and adding more services and more services.
Yeah.
So one of our customers who is a kind of sustainable company, whenever they've got a new project and they're doing this new stuff all the time, they're like, first thing they do is reach out to us, whether it's either for more services or literally to ask a question. What do you think? Do you think we should do it this way? And, you know, we're not going to say, oh, we're going to bill you for our time to give you ideas. We're part of their team. now, you know.
You've just got that connection with them.
Yeah, we're in their company's internal chat groups. We're one of the team, literally. So we're so integrated that we naturally will grow as they grow, and they're growing incredibly fast and incredibly well. So
that's amazing.
You know, and that's a true example of, like, we believe so much in their product that we're having conversations over dinner with people, and we're like, you have to check out these guys. You should see what they're doing. It's so cool. We love it. And by the way, we're working with them, but we don't care. Like, we don't need any referral, nothing, but you have to talk to these guys, because it's true. We love what they're doing, and it's really cool. And, you know, it's when you have that attitude, it's only going to bring success, I think, for what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when you're working for, you know, these clients that you love and you can really get behind, you naturally start getting referrals in the same industry. So it creates a great work environment.
Yeah. I mean, have you had any clients in the past where you felt like, oh, I really hate what they're doing?
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone's had clients that aren't a good fit, and it's not fun. And I think you have to let them go. You can't just tough through it.
That's such a good point. Yeah. Because it feels unnatural, and you know it, and you know that they feel it too.
Yeah.
And the longer you drag it on, it's like, oh, it gets worse and worse. And the last thing you want to do is start underperforming and, you know, just charging them for something you don't feel like they're getting the true value of, you know. And that's the worst place that anyone can be, and it's not fair for anyone. So I think you're right. Like, you have to cut ties. Yeah.
And then it starts negatively affecting your team as well. And it can be, it can be really a bad situation.
We've had that, especially when you come to the more design side of things, and, you know, a client has a toxic habits in terms of, like, wanting to change their design strategy week on week. And it's like, we've just created 100 artworks for your whole packaging system, and now you're deciding to change to a completely different direction. You know how it feels, and I think everyone listening has had that moment, but believe me, it's not worth the paycheck. You can get another client who fits a lot better, and they might be right at your doorstep, but you're missing them because you're spending all of your time trying to resolve a kind of broken relationship in a client.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great point. So, which brings us to our next question. So, what happens when you're approached by a prospect who isn't a great fit for your agency?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard conversation to have at times, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we would never say, we don't like you, bye. You know, that's not the way we're going to do it. But usually you can lead the prospect to that decision almost by themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, in the questions that you ask, in the way that you do your pre-sign up, your pre-onboarding, you can make it very clear that you have different values and visions. And you have to be honest in the whole process. And this is very important in your sales, in your inbound marketing funnel. You know, what steps do you have for that pre-qualification? And pre-qualification doesn't just mean they have enough budget. Doesn't just mean that, you know, they have the right kind of work. But does it mean that, can you do the work? You know, do you align in the values? You know, what are their values? Mm-hmm. And if you're asking these questions and they can't answer it, they're going to be like, why am I answering this? I don't care about this. You know, I'm going to go to someone else. And if they're like that, well, they probably don't align with what's important to you. So they're probably going to leave this whole, this whole process before it even gets to that point. So a lot of the time, if you set up your kind of pre-qualification, right, if you set up those questions, whether it's even in the lead form, if you're asking them stuff like, you know, what's the most important thing to you? What are your values? You know, do you believe in this? If you're a company and you're like, right, we're going to be all about female empowerment, every single company who works with us, it's going to be a female CEO or female manager. And if you ask that question, is your boss a female? Yes or no? Like, here's why, and then link to your company statement about that vision. If they're a guy like me and they're like, I'd be like, well, they're cool. They know what they want, and I'm not what they want. So maybe I need to go to someone else, you know, no hard feelings, right?
Yeah.
obviously it's not always as clear and simple as that, but I think there are ways that you can bring the prospect to that decision before you even have to say it. And then if they come to that point, you can simply say, well, I'm sorry, but we really feel that we just cannot deliver to the standards that your business needs and maybe the expectations that you have. And we only take on customers that we feel we can really serve and deliver a great service to. No business owner in their right mind would feel angry or upset about hearing that feedback. They would have the utmost respect. And if they don't, well, another red flag, you don't really want to work with them.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's really well said. Okay. So are there any other red flags that you would like to note when you have a potential client who's approaching you?
I mean, there's a few that I can spot from quite a way away. It's often when you have a pre-qualification call or something and they refuse to accept that they're hiring in a professional, and they have a kind of, you know, some people have ego about the way that they do their business and manage it, but there's that. And then there's another level where people are kind of telling you, no, this is how we're going to do it. And this is what works. And we've tried that. No, that doesn't work. This is, you know, you can know what works and doesn't, but there's a nuance. And I think you will, as you grow, and if you're a new agency owner, you're going to be a bit more flexible at the start, but as you continue to go, you're going to start to pick up on those kind of cues in conversation. It's hard to kind of put into words, but once you experience it, you'll kind of know what I mean. Another one is probably in the before signing, if they're asking for kind of examples, or they're asking you to do a mock-up, and then in that process, they're already changing their mind time after time and they really don't know what they want. Yeah. If they're saying, oh, actually, can you show us what it will look like in a 1920 style? And then, you know, the next email you get, oh, we just had a meeting. Can we maybe make it in a modern futuristic isometric style? And you're like, wait a minute, that's two completely different things.
Yeah.
If they're doing that before you've even started, and I know I'm talking from a design standpoint, but it's obvious it translates to everything. If they're ping-ponging back and forth about what they want, they're going to keep doing that. And you know, you want to sign on a company who are like, this is who we are, this is the most important thing to us, but this is what's missing in our business. We just don't know how to. And usually as a marketing agency, they're going to tell you that, you know, we've just hired another five people. We've got a new facility. We're ready to scale up, but we just don't know where to go. We've tried advertising and magazines. Everyone who comes to our shop, they love our product, but we just don't know what to do next. And you can then say, okay, I can bridge that gap by X, Y, Z. You know, that's the kind of conversation that you want to have. Or they might be at a wall in terms of creativity or technical knowledge, and they say, look, we're already doing really good, but we just want you to come in and inject us with new ideas. I mean, that is the perfect customer, that you can sit around a table and you can say, let's try this. Let's try this exciting thing. And they're like, great, let's do it.
And if they trust you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you will feel trust in conversation. You will start to pick up on these things. For all my new agency and new freelance people out there, I feel for you, because I know it's really hard at the start and you're just trying as hard as you can to sign that next client. But believe me, there's always the next one.
Absolutely. So what are some mistakes that marketers are making when it comes to serving their clients?
I think maybe taking on too much and taking on too much upon themselves. I'm both the preacher and the offender in this case. Sometimes coming from this creative background, I often say, oh, no, I just think it should be like this. Let's do this. And then I get a bit too involved, and from micromanaging to almost getting in Photoshop and opening up Photoshop and saying, yeah, this is what I want to do. And 2 hours later, I've gone into a creative wormhole and I've done something that, you know, what was I doing? You know, I've got a team of designers who are probably even more capable than me, but you know, you can't help that itch sometimes to get your hands dirty. Try and keep a helicopter view. You're now the agency owner. You're not the freelancer. So make sure that you keep that in mind and remind yourself. And you can lead with your expertise. A lot of agency owners, they start as freelancers and then, you know, they look to move to an agency model. Mm-hmm. And it can be a hard transition because you'll find yourself falling back as a freelancer. But you need to remind yourself the difference between a freelancer and an agency, right? Mm-hmm. We're a collection in theory of past freelancers, our agency. We're a collection of people who did a lot of freelance work, but we're giving our freelancers now the opportunity to work on bigger picture things, to work on bigger projects that they never could, to work on multiple projects at once, because instead of slaving away on something from start to finish, they're doing the thing that they're best at within that process. And then they get to do that and, oh, that's so cool. And then passing it on to, you know, their colleague who's based here. And then they're doing, oh, he's finishing that off. And then they're coming together and it's a real sense of pride. Whereas in the freelancer journey, you're probably good at one point and then you get like really stuck on another point and it's just painful. And then you get through it and then it all starts over again. But in an agency model, everyone involved can be spending their time doing what they love and what they're really good at. And that's the best thing. Now, as an agency owner, you may be great at taking pictures. You may be great at doing Facebook ads. You may be great at optimizing SEO. You may be excellent at that. But remember, you're an agency owner now. So you need to lead with that knowledge and excellence, but you need to allow your freelancers, your full-time staff, your agency people to really shine. It's now your job to pull them out and to really just be there to keep that culture, to keep the vision, and to keep that overarching strategy.
Yes, absolutely. Now it's your job to be working on the business instead of in the business.
Yeah, I love that. I love that, yeah.
So where do you see Nebsley Media in 5 years' time?
It's a good question and it's a hard one. I think, I definitely see us moving into next steps. I think moving into educational support for people is something that we're really passionate about. Our Thailand team has started a cool initiative where they're starting a marketing educational kind of, I wouldn't say foundation, but a system that they're looking to help bring people who would never have the chance, you know, maybe they're from a lower income background or they live in a rural area, but you know, we want to give them chances to join this incredible world of marketing. So they're putting a lot of work into educational resources, and we're going to be doing local scholarships as well.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah. That's awesome. Not only support them in their day school, but then also giving them support by sending them books that are really good about marketing, sending them things that they can do or getting them involved. I think that's the big vision, and that's where we'd really love to go, is working on things like that because it's so rewarding.
Absolutely. So cool. Yeah. And that's in Thailand that you're doing that?
Yeah, we're doing it in Thailand. We actually, through the pandemic, we had our first proper full-time intern actually in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
Yeah. So he reached out to us, DM'd us on Instagram because we were putting out this cool educational content and we were just, you know, sharing things that we're interested in. He was like, oh, I love your pictures, your style. It's so cool. Like, I'd love to somehow learn from you, like, or, you know, do you recommend anything? And he was in a hard place in that he had just finished his schooling and he was supposed to be, he was in his, after his first year of college, and then he was supposed to, had all of this stuff lined up and then pandemic hit. And it was like, oh, what do I do? I can't do any internships. Like, that's so sad. Mm-hmm. So we put together a whole virtual internship program with him.
That's awesome.
And we Yeah, and whilst he was kind of finishing his schooling that he needed to do, but really coached him up. And he was a bit intimidated, I think, at the start, because we said, look, we're going to teach you everything, you know?
Yeah.
we're gonna really give you hands-on experience. And it was really transformative. He was able to do stuff that he wasn't excited about, like a PR outreach. He was like, ooh, I'm not really interested in PR. And we were like, no, the first thing you've got to do is learn how to write and learn how to pitch press releases.
Amazing. He was like,
why does that make sense? That has nothing to do with what I asked you about, which is social media. And we're like, trust me, if you get that, everything will fall into place. And then he did sales and outreach via LinkedIn. He actually landed an article in one of the biggest student work publications in the state. So he got his article published on there from his exercise.
Good which, for him. Which That's was incredible. Awesome.
Yeah. 1 week of reaching out on PR, and he landed his coverage on that, which was great. And he also learned a lot about LinkedIn cold outreach. He grew up a lot of confidence in that, because I was like, trust me, you can talk to anyone on LinkedIn. You know, talk to the people who in the companies you want to work with, connect with them, do that. And he landed a job right after school, actually, from LinkedIn, using exactly what we told him. Connect with the people in the company, talk to them, how's it like working there? Then say, who would be the best person to talk to? He talked to them, connected with them, they gave him a chance, and now he's doing great things. So well done, Dominic, if you're listening.
That's awesome. Yeah. I have so much respect for people who use the pandemic to further themselves, like learn a new skill or work on their career, and just instead of sitting around twiddling your thumbs, which a lot of people did, but it's good for
He was really, he was great. But, you know, it really motivated us as well in our vision of doing this educational piece, because there's a lot of people who in their traditional schooling, they would never be exposed to that kind of thing. And I think even in school, you never really get taught the how to connect in that sense, and how to leverage tools like LinkedIn. Like, it just doesn't exist. So I'm really excited about that and the future of our Asia-based company. Like, they're doing really great things already. So again, shout out to that team. Well done, everyone. They just had their end of year kind of team outing as well, which we dialed into remotely, which is quite a different experience as well. But it was
awesome.
Great.
Awesome. I'm really excited for you guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, we are getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but first we have the Fast Five, which are five rapid fire questions.
Okay, great.
So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
Ooh, well, talking about Portland, Oregon, probably Shoe Dog. The memoir of
such
Phil
a good
Knight.
One. Yeah.
So good. And it's now my go-to gift for people starting companies. It's incredible. It just shows you that a brand like Nike, which is everywhere and anywhere you can imagine, they had moments where they were so close to being on edge, bankrupt, arrested, to all these extremes. And everyone follows these ups and downs and near misses, but somehow, when you keep at it and you keep by your values, it just works.
Yeah. For years, they almost went bankrupt. There were so many close calls. Yeah.
Even when they were turning over millions and millions of dollars,
they
were still, not able to pay some of their stuff. They were still, kind of like wheeling and dealing to get enough money to pay the guy who's, doing most of the growth for them. So
it's
an incredible book. And
I love that book.
A great cover design too. So
yeah.
That as well.
And then what does your morning routine look like?
I wake up quite in a daze and a haze, walk about. I get up at around 6 to 6:30 now. And sadly, now in the UK, we're out of the summertime. It means it's dark. It's cold. It's not the best time to get up. But start with the shower. And then usually in the mornings, I'm listening to an audiobook.
Okay.
Yeah, I could try and read a book, but to be honest, I get a bit blurry-eyed and lose focus and end up probably like nodding off, which...
You're not a big morning person.
I can do it, but I'm great at hitting that autopilot and doing what I need to do, but I'm not the most brain ready in the morning.
Gotcha.
But, try to stick away from too much work. But then, you know, the first project I do in a day is usually where I'll clear a couple of emails, you know, as we all do. But then I'll try and get that most difficult creative block that I've had and try and work through it, whether it's writing a long piece of text or it's doing that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the morning routine. Nothing special, unfortunately, from my end for the podcast listeners. But yeah.
No, good to know. Is there a CEO that you follow or study?
I wouldn't say that there's any one CEO that I really do follow and study. At the moment, I'm listening to Richard Branson's audiobook. It's another great one. But there's many, many great CEOs who have incredible content out there. I think it's about finding a company that you kind of really relate to. And I more enjoy following the company as a whole than a single CEO. Mm-hmm. I like to look at brands about how they communicate, how they talk, and how they kind of live and breathe their values. And, you know, I'm a big Instagram guy, so I'm always on the Instagram of companies and just checking in on them day to day.
Yeah, awesome. What is your favorite online tool?
Ooh, my favorite online tool. From a personal standpoint, from an agency owner, because I guess
as an agency owner, I would say.
Yeah, okay. As an agency owner, I mean, the whole Google network is just great. You know, it's kind of a basic answer, but we run all our emails through Google. You know, we're always collaborating on Google. We meet on Google Meet. We, you know, Google is our bread and butter, really. Obviously, great advertising platform on there too. But actually, a tool that is good that, you know, works well for our sales team, HubSpot, great free CRM. If you're
I love the HubSpot CRM.
It's incredible and it's free, guys. I mean, if you're organizing your leads in spreadsheets, you know, welcome to 2021.
Yeah,
you need to get yourself into a CRM because it's going to make your life easier in terms of managing your sales team about keeping an eye on where they're at, where leads are at, and it makes sure that everyone's aligned in that sense. So yeah, HubSpot CRM. And for my marketers out there, if you're not using Zapier in your lead generating ads, you need to use that because that tool will automate so much of the time consuming processes that you do. Even, you know, as simple as creating lead generating ads on Facebook, allowing Zapier to then automatically throw that into a spreadsheet for you. Mm-hmm. It's just saves you so much time and it makes your workflow a hell definitely. Of a lot more enjoyable. Yeah,
definitely. And also just to touch on the HubSpot CRM, there is an extension for Gmail where you can automatically transfer the information over to HubSpot. It's amazing.
Yes, I'm clapping to all the listeners because you can't see me, but I love that extension. And that's kind of in our team onboarding. I'm like, yeah, first thing you're going to do is learn HubSpot. Second thing you're going to do is get HubSpot as an extension on your Google Chrome browser. And then, because when you're sending an email to someone, sometimes you don't have the time to go into your HubSpot, but hey, this lovely little tool just allows you to add it into your CRM there. And then you can sort out all the data later. And the beautiful thing about a tool like HubSpot is you know when your customer's opened, how many times. So if you're having a follow-up meeting with a customer, I'd say check your HubSpot because it will let you know how interested they are in that meeting that you're about to have because they will have opened the email a day before, 2 days before, 10 minutes before, half an hour before. And if you've got someone doing that to your sales pitch email, it means that they're pretty hot on what you're sending them.
Yeah, good point. I love that. Last question. What's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
One thing. probably about Bitcoin. I wish I had taken some early advice on that. But, you know, in all seriousness, I think what I touched on earlier that, you know, your end goal as an agency owner is to lead and work on the business, not to be stuck in the business. And there's mm-hmm. been so many opportunities for our business, I guess, to scale, but I didn't see it because I was so busy being busy, you know, doing all sorts of things. And I was so, I guess, emotionally attached to every single project that I was like, oh, I don't want to hand it off to, you know, a freelancer, or I don't want to hand it off to another designer because I know what I want and I, why don't I do it? You know, but cut that tie and you will thank yourself for it.
Great advice. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Ben. It's been really great chatting with you.
Yeah. Likewise, it's been great talking to you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.